we will be much better off if there is a definitive winner in the presidential election, so that even if there were a court challenge, and even if the loser won the court challenge, that would not change the result.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, I'll speak with the attorney Richard Rifkin, who's now legal director at the Government Law Center at Albany Law School. He recently served as special counsel and consultant to the New York State Bar Association and worked in New York State government for 40 years, including as special counsel to former Governor Eliot Spitzer and Deputy Attorney General under Spitzer. We spoke about what happens this fall if the presidential election result is unclear. What role will the courts play? And what will President Trump do? Before we start talking about the fall election and what might come after it, could you just tell us a little bit about what you do at the Government Law Center and what its aims are?
I'm the legal director, and the Government Law Center is associated with Albany Law School. We hope to encourage our students to participate in government, possibly spend careers in government. And we also aim to assist both state and local governments as they carry out their responsibilities.
Do you find that people are still interested in what government does and working in government these days?
Yes, I think there's still an interest in working in government. We certainly have many students who participate in the programs of the Government Law Center and are eager to find positions as interns in either state or local government.
Let's talk about the fall election now. There's been a lot of sort of discussion in the run-up to voting about who will even have maybe the right to vote, the question over mail-in ballots, and that sort of thing. And there's also been a lot of warnings from elections experts that, number one, we may not have the result as quickly as we're used to, and number two, there are likely to be court cases stemming from Election Day. And add to the mix there that the president has already said, well, this election won't be legitimate. So what do you see happening in November and beyond before January 20th?
Well, let me divide the question if I can.
Okay.
Number one, all questions with regard to state election procedures, in other words, did the state carry out its election as provided by law, those questions can be answered only by state courts in that particular state. There is no federal jurisdiction, save one or two instances. The Voting Rights Act would be one, to deny someone the right to vote on account of race or color. But, of course, the case we're all interested in is Bush against Gore. And there, although the court found federal jurisdiction, its basis for jurisdiction was really tenuous.
Say more about that.
Sure. That decision came out of the state of Florida. The procedure worked just as it was supposed to. The Florida Supreme Court reached a decision, and then review was sought by the Supreme Court. And ordinarily, the Supreme Court should stay out of it. But the Supreme Court, at least in that instance, found that the Florida Supreme Court decision would deprive voters of federally guaranteed rights. That is, the right of equal protection and due process. And with a finding that there was a denial of federal rights, it was able to hear the case.
What about the question of precedent? Bush v. Gore was not supposed to leave a legacy for future Supreme Court decisions to refer back to. Am I correct about that?
You are correct. First of all, it was a 5-4 decision. Only 5 of the 9 judges would have found jurisdiction. But the court, recognizing how tenuous its jurisdiction was, basically said that it cannot define for the future when federal jurisdiction would arise in any future case. which fundamentally means Bush v. Gore is not precedent with regard to whether or not the Supreme Court can hear a case.
It's also interesting when we think about what might happen this year. In the 2000 election, the Supreme Court had one decision to make because ultimately the election came down to a few hundred votes in one state, in Florida. That would decide the outcome of the Electoral College map. But that might not be the case this time, right?
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely correct. We don't know what the Electoral College result is going to look like.
And your paper also makes the case that the way the Supreme Court is perceived 20 years on has changed a lot.
Well, I don't know whether it's changed. We will have the misfortune to find out if, in fact, the court takes a case and we sort of have a repetition of Bush against Gore. One of the truly surprising and admirable results of Bush against Gore was that once the Supreme Court decided, everybody in the public at large accepted the case. George Bush became the president, and everybody walked away from the dispute. And the question, which we don't know, is to whether we would have the same response to a Supreme Court decision in 2020.
We also had a candidate, Vice President Al Gore, who said, "I strongly disagree with this decision, but I accept it." And that was a signal to his supporters to, you know, to wrap up the fight.
That is correct. But it showed a respect for the court. In other words, what Al Gore was saying was the Supreme Court, which is the highest court in the United States, has spoken, and it's our obligation as citizens to accept its decision. And the question is whether, given the divisions in society today, we would have the same result.
Well, what do you think?
I don't know. I must say, as a lawyer and as a citizen of this country, I would hope that there is the same sort of respect for this court. Because the court, whether you like its decisions or don't like its decisions, it is critical that the rule of law be applicable to our society. And if we've lost the rule of law, we are in very big trouble.
Why do you think the court has become arguably more politicized in the last 20 years?
Well, first of all, you look at society today, and the divisions today are far greater than they were 20 years ago. And that's just the nature of our society today. In addition, there have, of course, been the confirmation hearings of judges who have been nominated by the president, and they have sort of been very divisive, almost brutal proceedings. And so that gives the public at large a view that the judges, as they're appointed to the court, becomes a political process rather than a judgment on their qualifications.
So circling back to the election, you know, you worked in New York state government for many decades. Are there things that states should be doing right now to forestall the possibility of, 50 different election challenges that have to be resolved between November 3rd and January 20th?
Yes, they should be doing everything they possibly can to make sure that the November election is implemented in accord with state law.
Meaning what? How do they accomplish that specifically?
Well, I mean, look what happened in our primary election here in New York. There were all sorts of complications. There were major disputes about of which ballots would be counted, which ballots wouldn't be counted, and it became quite contentious. I think the governor has helped yesterday when he signed the three bills he signed. It sort of clarifies New York law. It gives the Board of Elections more flexibility in its in the votes it can count. And now that the law has been clarified by the governor's signing of these bills, it's now the responsibility of the state board and the county boards to really implement this law just as it requires.
And we should just say here that the bills that the governor signed this week allow voters like a no excuse absentee ballot. They could just cite the pandemic fears to get a ballot in the mail instead.
That is correct. I mean, basically, in New York, there are several grounds for getting an absentee ballot. But the one that the governor's been looking at is a temporary disability. And the question that has been before him and the legislature is whether a fear of going to the polls is a temporary disability. For instance, I happily feel fine right now. So I can't say I'm disabled, but I have a fear of going to the polls. And the governor said that I can, on my application for an absentee ballot, say that I have a temporary disability based on this fear.
In terms of, you know, people's trust in the system here and a clean outcome, whoever wins, it's kind of better for the country if it's a overwhelming result rather than one that has to be parsed possibly on another, you know, 5-4 decision.
For sure. We will be much better off if there is a definitive winner in the presidential election, so that even if there were a court challenge, and even if the loser won the court challenge, that would not change the result in the Electoral College. That would create feeling of certainty that we had elected the correct individual. I would much prefer this not go to the courts, but I think we have to be ready. We have to think about it in case it does.
The Constitution doesn't really have a way of dealing with someone who has potentially lost, clearly lost, but not accepting that result. And we don't know what would happen in that situation, right?
Well, we know what would happen if there were a court determination. And let's say this was one of the cases that had to be decided by a court, and a court made a determination, whether it be the highest state court or the United States Supreme Court. The hope would be that that would be accepted. If it's not, there is no provision as to what happens on January 20th, 2021, especially if the current president is not declared the winner. The federal constitution is silent on that question.
Uh-oh.
Yes. And for instance, if Joe Biden were the winner in the vote of the Electoral College, what happens on January 20th, who has power? That all has to be determined, and how it gets determined is unknown.
Last question for you. What kind of damage do you think it's done that we have had two presidents in the last two decades who have lost the popular vote and still won the White House?
I think it's very unfortunate. As you may know, there's a movement to eliminate the Electoral College.
Yeah, the popular compact.
Yes, in other words, whoever wins the popular, as in most other elections, whoever wins the popular vote is the winner of the election. And I think we have demonstrated over the last several elections that we would be much better off if that were the case with regard to the presidential election.
It's been great talking to you. Thank you.
Okay, Ian.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. As always, stay safe. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.